Hello everyone, welcome back, and welcome to those who might be tuning in for the first time. It is around 6:30 in the morning here in Winnipeg on October 5th, 2014. I hope all is well in your part of the world. Although I know that right now existence seems to be expressing itself in some pretty wild ways. There seems to be a lot of upheaval in the various realms of existence. You have all kinds of social unrest, all kinds of economic insecurity, along with a number of wild disruptions in our usual weather patterns. People here in Winnipeg are disappointed that we didn't get what we expect to be our usual summer. The warm weather that we normally get, the very warm weather that we normally get, or we often get in our summers, that warm weather that lasts from maybe sometime in June through to the end of September. This year, it only came in the month of August, and it seems to have gone right at the very end of August. Yet again, it's another reminder that life doesn't have any particular pattern to its expression, and that we get what we get. There isn't any should be. A lot of people are walking around saying, well, we should have gotten a few months of warm weather. But actually, that's not the case. As always with life, you get what you get. And there's no way of saying exactly what we're going to get, because there isn't any particular arrangement to life's expression. I've had six people write in this month, four people with questions, and two with some very detailed comments. Before we get down to that, I just want to thank those who have written in with comments and questions. I want to thank those who have written in with words of appreciation. I want to thank those who have sent in donations and those who have ordered Bud Essence through the website. And as always, I want to thank Marcus Fellows for establishing this website in the first place and for continuing to post these talks each month. As is my habit recently, I also want to mention that if for any reason you're finding my responses to these questions and comments confusing, and you're still interested in considering what it is that I'm offering, you might want to listen to the two main talks on this website. If you go to the Listen Dropbox and you go down to the Talks title and you click on that Talks title, you will find the two main talks on this website. One is titled An Overview of Spiritual Awakening, and the other is titled Acknowledging the Moment. That second one is not so much a talk, it's more an invitation to acknowledge the vital pulsing dance of the moment. But these two pieces will offer you the broadest sense of what it is I'm offering here. So, having said all of that, let's get down to the questions. A first person has written in to say, Dear Darrell, as I've already expressed in my previous emails, I relate very much to what you're communicating. Do you have any thoughts about so-called hallucinogenic or psychedelic substances? He goes on to mention a number of psychedelic drugs, and he states that in his strongest drug experiences, he experienced life as one big, mysterious, flowing, miraculous, incredibly beautiful dynamic without any sense of being separate from that happening. Neither was there a sense of knowing anything at all. A sense of being a newborn baby who sees the world for the first time wouldn't be a bad description. He goes on to say that when he read my books, Dismantling the Fantasy and Essence Revisited, the sense of life which they apparently gave him at that time reminded him of his psychedelic experiences. He goes on to say that he knows that I've experienced many altered states of consciousness during long meditation retreats, and that I don't give them any great significance because they're ultimately just passing appearances of the big unexplainable whatever. But he still finds it interesting that what I'm communicating apparently gives him the same sense of life that those experiences with psychedelics gave him. Or as he says, maybe more accurately, it reminds me of the sense of life which has always been there, but not always really acknowledged because of what, false storylines? I really don't know. Even that description doesn't really seem to make any sense, so maybe I'll just stop here. I don't know if there's any particular question here. I'd just be curious to hear your thoughts about the topic. I don't really have a lot of thoughts about this topic. It is true that on long meditation retreats and in what you would call intense states of concentration, I have experienced a lot of altered states of consciousness, what we would call altered states of consciousness, really wild experiences. It's also the case that I grew up in the 60s, and for any teenager in the 60s, hallucinogenic drugs were very much part of the experience. Now, it is the case that for some, the experiences under the influence of those drugs really heighten the sense that life is one big miraculous happening and that we don't exist as anything apart from that happening. And it is the case that in just a simple acknowledgement of the facts of this moment, that's the same acknowledgement. In both cases, it's life, and the bottom line in life is that it's a totally unexplainable happening, simply happening. So as far as I'm concerned, that's the reason that considering the basic facts of life, just a simple consideration of the ordinary moment and what we already acknowledge as the facts of this ordinary moment would leave you with the impression, the feeling, that this ordinary moment is a totally unexplainable happening, simply happening. So it is the case that for some, taking these psychedelic drugs really makes that totally miraculous happening of the moment very obvious. Now, I don't have any further thoughts on this because in both cases, this is a totally unexplainable happening. So whatever experience I've had growing up in the 60s or being on long meditation retreats and experiencing deep states of concentration or just the acknowledgement of this simple happening of the moment, the acknowledgement is the same acknowledgement. Whatever this is, there's no way of saying what it is. It's just this happening, happening. It's also the case that a simple consideration of the ordinary moment is a more reliable acknowledgement of this totally mysterious happening. It's true that for some individuals taking psychedelic drugs, hallucinogenic drugs, may leave them with the impression of this totally miraculous happening of the moment. But that's not for everyone. For a lot of people, taking those drugs simply heightens the sense of separation, alienation, isolation, despair. What else? A sense of fear, paranoia, and confusion. And even if the drug experience is a pleasant one, for 99.999% of the people who experience that pleasant drug experience, it's a big disappointment when it leaves. And we come back to the ordinary, simple happening of life. Again, for those rare individuals in which, for whom the drug experience really acknowledges this totally unexplainable happening of the moment, and that it may emphasize the fact that their ordinary existence is also just this totally unexplainable happening. In relation to a non-dual perspective, that's the acknowledgement. For some apparent person who's expressed with a non-dual sensibility, there's no longer any fascination with explanation. The fascinating aspect of this moment is that it is a vibrant, pulsing event that no one's doing. Whatever this happening is, whatever this ordinary feeling that something's happening right now, whatever this is, there's no way of truly saying what it is. It's happening spontaneously. It's just happening. Everything that seems to be expressed in existence is simply happening. That becomes the fascination. Any idea that this can be explained, this happening of this moment can be explained, becomes absolutely ridiculous from a non-dual sensibility. So the part of this question that I'd like to emphasize is, he's curious as to why listening to what I say or reading what I've written would give him the same feeling about life as these psychedelic drugs gave him. So he's curious about that, and he's wondering if it's just that the drugs reminded him of what has always been here, or made obvious what's always been here, but isn't really acknowledged because of what, false storylines? Like, he's questioning why this is occurring the way it's occurring, why it is that the drugs gave him a certain feeling, and why it is that listening to what I say gives him a certain feeling about life. And he goes on to say, I really don't know. Even that description doesn't really seem to make any sense, so maybe I'll just stop here. And he wants to know if I have any thoughts about the topic. So my main thought about the topic is, or my main consideration of this topic would be, look at this sense that you don't really know, that even the description that the drug allowed you to acknowledge what's already here, and isn't usually seen because of storylines, even that description doesn't really seem to make any sense anymore. So this is the non-dual sensibility. There is this happening, and there is no explanation for it. It just happens the way it happens. There's no way of saying what's happening. There's no way of saying what this is. So we have the basic feeling that something is happening in this moment. But there's no actual way of saying what this is. It's very simple to acknowledge that it's not a bunch of forms influencing each other. And it's very simple to acknowledge that the apparent words, the apparent descriptions of this happening don't really apply. But there is no way of actually saying anything true about what this is. So from a non-dual sensibility, that's the main consideration. That's the fascination. There's just this happening. There's just this happening. There's no way of saying what it is. There's no one making it happen. There's no person that exists separate from it that influences it. It's just this. All right. A second person has written in to say, "Hi, Daryl. I have a question about page 80 in Dismantling the Fantasy. Here you say that if we attempt to repress a dominant response to any situation, that it produces conflict. Please, can you elaborate on this? Because it sounds like a case of cause and effect. And also, wouldn't the repression, delay, or ignorance of a response also be simply a portion of the flow of nature? Many thanks. Your work is like a high five with God." Best regards. All right, so she's quoted a line from page 80 in Dismantling the Fantasy, in which I say that if we attempt to repress a dominant response to any situation, it produces conflict. And she says that sounds like a case of cause and effect. And she's questioning, wouldn't this attempt to repress or delay a dominant response to a situation, wouldn't that also be the natural flow of existence? So, yes, ultimately from this non-dual sensibility, everything is simply the natural expression of whatever this moment is. It's just happening the way it happens. So, one of the things you have to keep in mind with reading Dismantling the Fantasy, and I state it outright in Dismantling the Fantasy, that everything in that book is a fantasy. That basically, with that writing, I enter the usual storylines that we all carry in order to point out the major contradictions in those storylines. And in pointing out the major contradictions in those storylines, it points out that ultimately there is the happening of this moment, what we would call the happening of this moment, and there isn't any way of saying what this is. So Dismantling the Fantasy is not ultimately a statement about this mysterious happening of the moment. Dismantling the Fantasy and my other book, Essence Revisited, these are simply a consideration of the usual storylines that we carry, and a consideration of the contradictions within that storyline. And ultimately, all of it is pointing to the totally unexplainable, vibrant, pulsing eventing of this moment. But ultimately, the focus is on the fact that it can't be explained. That there is no way of describing what is happening here in any true way. There's no way of really saying anything about existence without it being in some way misleading. Because if you put the focus on a description, it takes the focus away from the totally miraculous dance of the moment, the dance in which that what we call description is just one of the passing expressions, one of the apparent expressions, one of the mysterious expressions. So the whole focus of Dismantling the Fantasy was to point to the totally mysterious dance of this moment, the vibrant, pulsing happening of this moment, and to acknowledge that there is no explanation for any of this. So ultimately in that, we have to acknowledge that absolutely everything that's occurring is simply a totally unexplainable happening. And that's what is apparently arising here with the person who's written in, because she's starting to question some of the phrasing that I use in the book, because the logic of that that viewpoint is falling apart. So this person who's written in, she's questioning certain phrases that I've used because they no longer make sense. It makes more sense that absolutely everything that's happening is simply the dance of this totally unexplainable, vibrant event of the moment. So as I point out in Dismantling at a certain point, everything in this book is also a fantasy. Everything that I'm presenting is also a fantasy, but it's a fantasy that will dismantle itself. So the considerations that are presented will dismantle the belief in description, and what remains is just the totally unexplainable happening of this moment. It seems that that's a very subtle and tricky kind of expression, to actually enter the storylines in such a way that a consideration of the storylines leaves you with a total inability to believe the storyline. And ultimately, what remains is just the happening of this moment, with no real explanation for it, but the acknowledgement that there is no true description of it. There is nobody making it happen. It's just this happening, happening. All right. A third person has written in to say, "Hi, Daryl. I would like to say a big thank you for last month's questions answered. I found it highly informative. However, there is something that is causing me some confusion. I know you don't really have any interest anymore in reading what other apparent non-dual teachers have to say, but I came across a guy called Dennis Waite, who seems to consider himself something of an expert on the subject, and he is highly skeptical of teachers who hold satsangs and present what he refers to as neo-advaita, which presents people with a bottom-line final answer when each person is at a different so-called level of understanding. He places great emphasis on traditional methods and insists that it is essential that one is taught personally all about the scriptures, etc. Just to round this rambling email off, here is what he says." So she quotes Dennis Waite, "Seekers and teachers alike need to reconcile themselves to the fact that there can be no short-term measures. We have generations of wrong thinking to rectify, so that we may learn to look at ourselves and the world in a completely different way that contradicts our present beliefs. Instinct, habit, and deeply held opinion can never be overturned by a brief question and answer session on no particular topic by individuals each with their own agenda. It requires a prolonged, coordinated inquiry using proven techniques with the help of teachers skilled in using those techniques. Genuine seekers of the truth must find a teaching environment that satisfies these requirements. He also states that it can take years of being taught to even come to anywhere near an understanding. And then she says, that's probably not good news for me at age 65. Sorry this is a long-winded email, but as you were apprenticed to a mindfulness teacher and spent 6 years as a meditation monk, I would very much appreciate your comments. Many, many thanks, Daryl, with much appreciation and love. Let's be very clear that in my apparent storyline, I have had what might be considered a lot of experience with formal meditation. So a conservative estimate would be I have well over 30,000 hours of formal meditation practice now, and that's all kinds of meditation. Meditation on objects, meditation on sound, meditation on imaginary patterns in the mind, meditations on the breath, as well as the majority of the time being focused on simple awareness meditations, the simple acknowledgement of the happening of the moment, specifically focusing on mindfulness practices as described in Buddhism. And it's also true that I've had a lifelong interest in considering what life is about. And so I've spent an apparent lifetime exploring the writings of many well-known teachers, and that I've spent time with fairly respected teachers that have a focus. Their focus in life is to examine the fundamental nature of life. So I've always had that question, what is life really about? So whatever I say comes from that apparent context. And I would say that it's quite possible for somebody to sit down and consider their own experience, to never have had any formal meditation practice, and to not go to any spiritual teacher, and to simply consider the happening of their life, and to come to realize that it's a totally mysterious happening that has no explanation, that they don't exist as anything apart from that happening. And that in that realization, they actually transcend any spiritual teaching. In fact, they transcend, I mean, we could loosely say that they transcend any description of existence. That they transcend any sense of understanding existence, and they transcend any sense of doership. That they come to acknowledge the fundamental nature of the happening of this moment. We all have the feeling that something is happening in this moment. Even if we drop all the ideas, there's the feeling that there's an actual happening. So if we talk about seeing, the word seeing just points to an actual happening that we would call seeing. And that's the same case with what we call hearing, touching, tasting, smelling, and thinking. These words just point to an actual happening, what we might call the vibrant, pulsing event, the lively dynamic of the moment. These words just point to this happening. So right now, we all have the feeling that something is happening. And even if we don't call it anything, it still feels like something's happening. It doesn't feel like there's nothing. You know, we can say the words seeing, hearing, touching, tasting, smelling, and thinking, but if we stop thinking those words, it doesn't feel like there's a nothingness. It still feels like there's this vibrant happening. That's not a word. And it's quite possible for someone to acknowledge that happening, to acknowledge that there's no way to describe what this happening is, and to acknowledge that no one is making this happening happen. It's quite possible to acknowledge all of that from your ordinary life experience. You don't need to go to some spiritual teacher to acknowledge that. Now, I can say that because I've dealt with hundreds of people who've done that, or for whom that's happened. They haven't done it. I mean, it just happens. But I've dealt with hundreds of people for whom that's the case. And when they left their conversation with me, and I've checked in with them years later, it's gone even deeper, that sensibility. I don't know Dennis Waite. I don't know what it is he teaches, so I'm making no comment about Dennis Waite and the things that he teaches. This person who's written in, she sent in a particular quotation, and I can make a comment on that quotation, so let's directly consider the quotation. The quotation is, "Seekers and teachers alike need to reconcile themselves to the fact that there can be no short-term measures. We have generations of wrong thinking to rectify so that we may learn to look at ourselves and the world in a completely different way that contradicts our present beliefs. Instinct, habit, and deeply held opinion can never be overturned by a brief question and answer session on no particular topic by individuals each with their own agenda. It requires a prolonged coordinated inquiry using proven techniques with the help of teachers skilled in using those techniques. Genuine seekers of the truth must find a teaching environment that satisfies these requirements. It can take years of being taught to even come anywhere near an understanding." Okay, so let's look at some of these statements. We have generations of wrong thinking to rectify so that we may learn to look at ourselves and the world in a completely different way that contradicts our present beliefs. Well, we don't have generations of wrong thinking to rectify. They're just the thoughts we have in this moment. So this, the acknowledgement of this moment is simply a consideration of whether the thoughts, the assumptions that we've made about this moment are actually true in relation to our experience of this moment. So that's all we really have to coordinate. It's just our apparently present thoughts about what's happening in this moment. Do they actually apply to what's happening in this moment? He goes on to say, "Instinct, habit, and deeply held opinion can never be overturned by a brief question and answer session on no particular topic by individuals each with their own agenda." So that's pretty straightforward. If you're having conversations about nothing in particular, you're really not going to approach any particular topic and bring about any shift in understanding. So, as he points out, a brief question and answer session on no particular topic by individuals, each with their own agenda. So if you're wanting to consider the fundamental nature of the vibrant happening of this moment, if you sit down and you don't talk about that, you don't consider that, you're really not going to experience any shift in understanding around that. I mean, that's pretty straightforward. I do sort of wonder, it seems to me he's making a comment about certain presenters, non-dual presenters, and he's kind of lumping a whole group of them into his idea that they're just people talking about nothing in particular. But let's move on to the next statement. He says this, basically this consideration of non-duality requires a prolonged coordinated inquiry using proven techniques with the help of teachers skilled in using those techniques. So I mean, that statement could just simply be that you've had a lifetime interest in life and wondering what the fundamental nature of life actually is, and you may have gone around talking to your friends and reading the works of fairly respected philosophers, fairly respected non-dual teachers, and that lifetime consideration is a prolonged coordinated inquiry using proven techniques with the help of teachers skilled in using those techniques. Because it doesn't really matter, you know, I don't really know what he means by techniques, but with this non-dual acknowledgement, it really is simply an acknowledgement of the fundamental nature of this moment, the happening of this moment. We have the feeling that something's happening right now. The question is, what is it? So there's this vibrant happening of the moment where even if all thinking falls away, it still feels like there's some vibrant happening of the moment. Even if we don't describe it. Now, even if we just point, like, we have the feeling that there's an actual happening and then there's a label for it or a description of it. But standing on a mountain is not the same as just reading a book about standing on the mountain. So there's a difference between the actual, you know, so there's this happening of this moment, and that's different from this description of the happening of the moment. Even if all the descriptions fall away, there's this happening. So the non-dual acknowledgement is an acknowledgement of the fundamental nature of this vibrant pulsing happening right now. That's all it is. And it doesn't matter if you've learned to count your breath without your attention leaving the breath, or whether you've learned to focus on some aspect of this moment, or whether you've learned to concentrate on a mantra, or whether you've learned to use a yantra, you know, some pattern that you hold in the mind, or whether you've done kasina meditations, where you focus on colored discs, and then you hold that color in your mind to get the expansiveness of pure space, or it doesn't matter what techniques, what so-called meditation techniques you've used, or whether you've learned to constantly monitor the happening of the moment, a non-dual sensibility, a non-dual acknowledgement is an acknowledgement of the fundamental nature of the happening of this moment. So the acknowledgement that whatever this is, there is no true way of describing it. Whatever this is, no one is making it happen. Whatever this is, just happens the way it happens. Now, it's true that certain people in a very formal situation, doing formal meditation practices and considering traditional teachings, they've come to acknowledge the totally unexplainable, vibrant dynamic that this moment is. It's also the case that someone like Einstein, when he was 17 years old, read Schopenhauer, and Schopenhauer's statement that you can do what you want to do, but you don't create your wants. And in reading that, Einstein realized, oh, I'm an expression of the universe. Everything that I am is simply an expression of the universe in the same way that trees are an expression of the universe, grass is an expression of the universe, squirrels are an expression of the universe, storms are an expression of the universe. All of it is the expression of this totally unexplainable, ultimately unexplainable happening. Now, Einstein realized that at age 17 without having done any formal meditation practice. He just acknowledged his own basic experience of life. We all have the sense that when we came out of the womb, we had no story for existence. We all have the sense that whatever stories we were taught, whatever stories we have, we were taught. Whatever labels we have for existence, you know, if we call something a nose and something else an ear and something else a wall and something else a floor, we have the sense that we call them that because somebody told us to call them that. We have the sense that before we were told to call them that, we had no story or label for anything. It's also the fact that in another country that speaks a different language, you get a different word to point to this happening. So we have the basic sense that as a baby, there was just a totally unexplainable happening. Then we were taught to call certain portions of this happening by a certain name. But it's also the fact that the word just points to the unexplainable happening. It's still an unexplainable happening. And where is that unexplainable happening? It's this happening of this moment. We have a bunch of apparent words that point to this happening, but none of those words tell us what this happening actually is. It's also the case that what we point to generally is a form. So we point to something and we say, that's a wall. And we point to something and we say, that's an ear. And we point to something and we say, that's a person. And we point to something and we say, that's a car. But it's also the case that our experience of all of this, our entire life experience of these apparent things, is that they're changing. That they have no particular form, that that body is going to apparently disappear, that that car is going to rust away, that that building is going to be either torn down or fall down. And if it's left to the ravages of nature, the wood and the stone will wear away. It will turn to powder. That powder will become so small, we say it returns to the form of energy. So all of our life experience indicates that we have no true name for the happening of this moment, and this happening has no particular arrangement. It has no stable form. So our entire life experience backs up the fact that this is simply a vibrant, flowing event. There's no way of saying what it is. And it's also the case that our entire life experience indicates that we do not create our body and brain. right now we're not overseeing how they operate. We're not making the heart beat, and we're not making the electrochemical firing of the brain cells occur, the electrochemical firing of the brain cells that give rise to the next thought. And in fact, our entire experience of thought is that it simply arises, it simply happens. Our entire experience shows us that we don't create our basic needs, we haven't created our basic interests. We can't, you know, if we like art, we can't just snap our fingers and love science instead. Our entire experience indicates that our urges to do something, we don't create those urges. And if we have an urge to do something and it's strong enough to provoke an action, we haven't created our abilities to follow through on that action or our inabilities to follow through on that action. So our entire life experience points very immediately to this moment being just a happening that has no name or explanation. It's not something that we make happen, and we don't exist as anything apart from the happening. So if we just sit down right now and make no effort to do anything, the happening doesn't stop happening. The totally mysterious process that life is, the totally mysterious process, this vibrant happening of this moment, this vibrant pulsing event right now, what is it? There isn't any way of saying what it is. If we make no effort, it doesn't stop happening. It's just happening. And the process that we are is part of the happening. That's all that can be acknowledged. There's just this, whatever this is. It is what it is. There's no way of saying what it is. There's no one making it happen, and there's nothing existing apart from this. It's just this. It is what it is. To acknowledge this, all that's apparently needed is an interest in acknowledging this. The fact of the matter is always evident, but it seems as though very few people want to acknowledge it. However, there are some people within an apparent formal meditation tradition or formal spiritual tradition that have an interest in acknowledging the totally mysterious dance of this moment. And there are apparent individuals who never have anything to do with any traditional spiritual teaching, with any practice of any kind, that have an interest in acknowledging this totally mysterious and vibrant dance of the moment. It is also the case that even if this is acknowledged at a very early age, there are apparent individuals who acknowledge this totally mysterious dance at a very early age, but actually, forget it. I have nothing more to say about this. All right. Another person has written in to say, "Hi, Daryl. In the Ashtavakra Gita, it is always stated that my true nature is only that of an observer or consciousness, observing my own body, other bodies, and the world outside. Who observes after death? Because I have no memory of an observer before birth, so certainly there will be no observer after death. It seems obvious that the observer comes into being only with brain functioning. So where is consciousness after death? Could you please say something about it in your view? Many thanks in advance." Aha. First of all, let's be clear about what the Ashtavakra Gita is stating. So early on in the Ashtavakra Gita, it makes a point of saying that we are pure awareness or pure consciousness. So we are the awareness that is aware of the many things in existence. Now that's how it starts out. It's getting us to consider life in a slightly different way, or a radically different way to how we normally consider life. Now, as the Ashtavakra Gita goes on in its statements, it begins to question even this notion that we are awareness or consciousness, something called awareness or something called consciousness. So ultimately it says, it states that the knower, the knowing, and everything known, these do not exist. We are that in which they appear to exist. So it says outright that there's something happening here, and normally we interpret that as something, but those interpretations are false. So it says it's like the appearance of a snake in a rope. So it may be that in a dark situation you see a rope and it looks like a snake, and so you have a lot of fear and confusion around that, and you avoid the rope. But if you look at it more closely, you discover it's not a snake, it's a rope. And so it is in the Ashtavakra Gita. It's pointing out that normally we look on life as, or we interpret life as being a situation of a knower, a knowing, and things that are known. And it's stating outright that that's not true. So the knower, the so-called awareness or consciousness, and the knowing, which you might also call awareness or consciousness, that doesn't exist. We are that in which it appears to exist. So if we really connect with what's being presented in the Ashtavakra Gita, it states outright that none of the descriptions apply to what's happening here and now. It will say that our usual notions of a definable world, the various things of life arising and passing away, that these are like waves on an ocean. There is just this ocean which doesn't have any particular form. Now, they're doing their best to use that as a metaphor for the happening of this moment. The happening of this moment is a vital dynamic. It's an unformed liveliness, which is not a thought. And the Ashtavakra Gita is ultimately stating that none of the descriptions apply. And so that ultimately means that descriptions of consciousness or awareness, those don't apply either. So what's being pointed to is that the idea that there's something called consciousness which arises and passes away, or that there are bodies which arise and pass away, or that there are any things that arise and pass away, that's ultimately false. That what is right here and now is a happening, or a vibrancy, a sense of presence, a presence or a happening or a vibrancy, a lively dynamic, a pulsing and tingling event, eventing. And that there's no way of saying what this is. There is no way of defining this. So as Alan Watts used to point out, you can't capture flowing water in a bucket. That if you're standing by a river and you run into the river and with a bucket and you grab a bunch of the flowing water and you bring it out and you put it on the ground, you haven't captured the flowing. So he points out that if you try to capture flowing water with a bucket, you don't understand the flowing. because you can't capture that flowing in a bucket. You simply, in order to have the flowing, you just let it flow. You don't try to capture it. You don't try to grasp it. And in the same way, you can't capture the flowing, unformed dynamic of this moment with a description of a form. The words that we have, like if we're going to acknowledge basic consciousness or what we might call basic awareness, it would be simply the happening of this moment. The word just points to the feeling that right now, the word just points to this happening of this moment, the feeling that something is happening. That's the basic feeling of awareness. That's the basic feeling we call consciousness. And these words can't tell us what this happening actually is. They just point to this happening. Now, we can't say what this happening is because it has no form. It's a vital dynamic that is never the same from moment to moment. You can't capture that by describing a form, by describing a thing, because there is no thingness. In the same way that you can't capture flowing water in a bucket, and you can't capture the movement of smoke in a snapshot, you cannot capture the flowing of this moment, the totally unexplainable, unformed, lively, pulsing, vibrating dance of this moment, by trying to describe it as a particular thing. So, from this non-dual sensibility, the questions about birth and death no longer apply, because all there is this totally unexplainable happening. There's no way of saying anything truly about it. Not only do we not have a memory of an observer before birth, we don't have a memory of a birth. All we have is the sense that something is happening right now, and that whatever this is, it doesn't have a particular form. It's also the fact that whatever this is all that is. We don't have the experience of anything existing apart from this happening. Like, we don't have the feeling that we exist. We don't have the experience that we exist apart from just this simple happening of the moment. Everything that we are is also just this simply happening, or this simple happening of the moment. With this acknowledgement, all that remains is this totally mysterious, vibrant happening of this moment, and the acknowledgement that it has no particular form, that this is all that ever seems to exist. We can't say it's a nothingness, because it doesn't feel as though nothing's happening. It feels like something is happening, but there's no way of saying what this is. None of the descriptions apply. The descriptions that use names, labels, and form, labels that are pointing to ideas of form, these don't apply to whatever this is. So what happens with this acknowledgement is that all of the ability to say anything true about life falls away, and therefore all of the questions about life fall away, because we only ask a question when we believe there's a possible answer. And there isn't any answer. There isn't any way of saying anything at all about this happening of this moment. All of the ideas about consciousness, that there is a consciousness that's been born, those are false. There's just this totally unexplainable happening. Now, I know some of you out there have the feeling that I'm pointing to something that's really difficult to see in this moment. But all I'm pointing to is just your ordinary happening, the ordinary life you have right now, which is the happening of this moment. And I'm saying that this happening, there is no way of saying what this is. It feels for all of us like something is happening right now. Anyone apparently listening to me talk about this in this moment, it feels like something's happening right now. I'm saying there's no way of saying what that is. Of saying what this is, this feeling that something's happening right now, there's no way of truly saying what it is. We have all kinds of apparent descriptions, but when we examine those storylines, those descriptions, it becomes obvious they're not true. We look at a wall and we call it a wall because somebody told us to call it a wall. We don't know what that is. The happening of this moment, somebody told us to call it awareness, and we go around saying, oh, it's pure awareness, it's pure awareness, it's pure consciousness, it's pure consciousness. Why are we doing that? We don't know what this is. We only say it's awareness or consciousness because it seems like somebody told us to call it that. But that person was told to call it that too. We all have the story that when we came out of the womb, we didn't know what this was. There was no label for this. There was no story for this. And any of the stories that we have in our stories, we were simply taught to say those things. And all they do is point to this happening, which is a totally mysterious happening. Nobody's making this happening happen. The process that we apparently are, that's a totally mysterious happening. Nobody's making the happening happen. If we sit here right now and make no effort, this so-called happening of the moment doesn't stop happening. This vibrant sense that something's happening, the vibrant liveliness of this moment, the pulsing and vibration, and the warming, cooling, sounding, silencing, lightening, darkening, happening, it doesn't stop happening. The entire process that we think we are, that doesn't stop happening if we make no effort at all. These words that are apparently coming out of my mouth, we don't know what they are. There's no way of saying what that is. The apparent thought that's arising in this moment, there's no way of saying what that is, truly. Within our storyline, somebody told us to call it a thought, but if we don't call it anything, it still happens. And the word just points to this mysterious happening. So, from this non-dual perspective, there's no birth and death to consider. There's no consciousness that's arisen and a consciousness that's going to fade away. None of these considerations apply. As the Buddha pointed out, descriptions don't apply. So the Buddha called himself the Tathagata. Now, basically that just means someone who's come to what actually is. The literal translation is one who is to thusness come, or one who is to thusness gone. It just means one who has come to what is. And he said, if you acknowledge what actually is, one who acknowledges what actually is, one who has come to what actually is, no longer attempts to describe this isness in terms of physical form feelings, perception, mental activities, or states of consciousness. These descriptions do not apply. Now, to acknowledge that these descriptions do not apply doesn't mean that the happening that we call thought doesn't go on happening. It's just acknowledge that there's no way of saying what that is. So in this happening of this moment, we all have the feeling that something's happening right now. What is it? If I ask you, what is this? You don't have any way of telling me what this is. You have a word that somebody told you to use, but you all have the sense that before somebody taught you that word, it was just a totally mysterious happening. So the word just points to this totally mysterious happening. And you all have the impression that if you sit here and make no effort to do anything, the happening still happens. Your whole life experience points out that it has no particular form because we walk around complaining that everything is changing. The weather isn't what it used to be. My body isn't what it used to be. My relationship isn't what it used to be. The economy isn't what it used to be. The government isn't what it used to be. It's all changing. I want it to stand still, but it's all changing. So our entire life experience points out that we don't have a legitimate name for the happening of this moment. Nobody's making it happen. It doesn't have a particular form. So it's not going to be anything in particular, ever. It's just going to be this moving, shifting, dancing event. And nothing exists apart from this. The whole process that we are is an expression of this, whatever this is. There's no way of really saying anything true about this. So there's no need to ask any questions about it fundamentally, ultimately. Apparent questions may arise, and apparent descriptions may arise, but all of that is just a totally unexplainable happening, simply happening. Happening in the same way that the seasons change, that the planet rotates, the way that water evaporates, rises up, condenses, and falls to the ground, all of it just happens spontaneously. Whatever this is, it just happens in whatever way it happens. It has no particular form. In any moment, it just is what it is. All right, so that brings us to the end of the questions, and that leaves us with a couple of comments. The first one is fairly detailed. So this person has written in to say, Daryl, I just want to say that what is has nothing to do with the description of the universe and its subtle functioning. It has nothing to do with ideas of purpose and goodness. It has nothing to do with how to live or how not to live. It has nothing to do with how to get closer to this message or any message. There is no such thing as insight. There is no such thing as understanding life. No such thing as understanding. No such thing as being in the now. No such thing as being or some notion of now or presence or awareness. All of that is fantasy, as you state, which simply means we don't know and can't know what is going on in any way whatsoever. My personal life, as it appears, is simple. My cherished family, cherished health, bills, joy and pain, clarity and confusion, and even involved faith, my very enthusiastic involvement with the 12 steps of Alcoholics Anonymous, on which my sobriety and my life seem to depend. Yet even as those activities unfold, exploring your perspective seems to have articulated the basic sense that I don't know how all that works or where it's going. This life is full of joy, pain, and seamless functioning, like all of nature, and there's no understanding it, no getting outside of it or grasping it. I practice prayer, but to me the essence of prayer is that we don't know who we are, who we're speaking to, or what this is. We move from, God, why have you forsaken me, to, thy will be done, but not of our own doing, nor understanding, nor description. No listener needs to ask, what should I do about this or that, because there is no should. We just do what we do. Or to express it more simply, even this inquiry, this prayer by email, is a formless, inexplicable event. Thanks for having shared your perspective. For reasons unknowable and in a way that can't be described, this perspective seems to have come into my life and little by little has dismantled my life, leaving it exactly as it is. Not as how it should be or could be, or even as the description my life, but just this. It happens. Needing no justification, no explanation, no prescription, no description. All my apparent frustration and anxiety in life has come from trying to corroborate my experience with someone else's. At some point, it was realized that I don't even have a point of view. What's taking place is as uncontrollable and spontaneous as anything else in nature, and there's no need and no possibility of double-checking that with anyone, including you. I could say, thanks for having shared your perspective, but I know that's not what's happening. Thank you for sharing your perspective. Best regards. All right, so I get a number of people contacting me to express this. It's not always so detailed. And in the past month, I had a couple of people write in to express this in a fairly detailed fashion. So this thing that I've just read, I don't think it needs any comment. It's pretty straightforward. And the last person to write in wrote in saying, "Hi, Daryl. Thanks so much for your talk in which you addressed my question regarding what is pointed to by the word consciousness. I have to admit, when I first heard your response, I started getting irritated when you were explaining how it's not consciousness, and that's just another label. As is pointed out by the various teachers I mentioned in my question, I felt as if you did not acknowledge what I was referring to, as I meant the attribute of consciousness that is innate in everything, and not the word or label. So I kind of got put off and did not even hear part two of your talk, but last evening and this morning, something compelled me to listen to your answer to my question again, as well as part two of the talk, where I noticed another person had asked a similar question. In this reply, it started getting clearer and clearer as to what you meant when you said we cannot really define what this is. A remarkable feeling came over me just a couple of hours ago, where I just couldn't explain anything. It's just one happening, and any explanation can only point to a portion of it. As you said, explanation is a relative truth, and a relative truth is not a truth at all. This is just the push I needed to understand this, and that is that I can never understand it using beliefs/concepts. Whatever those are. In short, it is a completely mysterious dance, as you said, and even the so-called intellectual thoughts and rationalizations are merely another mysterious part of the happening, and living my life with actions that spring from any such understanding is also just another part of this which ultimately cannot be explained. Thank you ever so much. Lots of love, good wishes, and gratitude." So again, I don't think that needs any comment. It's pretty straightforward. All right, so that brings us to the end of everything that was written in this past month. But I'm still a bit revved up here, so let's see, what else could we get into. This non-dual consideration, it has nothing to do with spirituality. It has nothing to do with non-duality or duality. It has nothing to do with meditation and liberation. All of these are stories that don't apply to this. All it is an acknowledgement of the fundamental nature of this moment. So we have the happening of this moment, what we would call the happening of this moment. Even if all the thoughts fall away in this moment, even if we make no attempt to do anything, it still feels as though something is happening right now. And it's not a thought. So, you know, all those Zen masters, when a student would come up to them and say, "What is the truth?" You know, maybe the Zen master's eating a banana and the disciple, the student, asks, "What is truth?" And the Zen master just jams the banana in their face. They're trying to get them, their focus away from thought and into the vital happening of the moment, which is not a thought. So we all have the impression that something is happening right now. What is it? Now, if you say, "Oh, this is just basic awareness," it's not basic awareness. The word awareness just points to this happening, the feeling that something is happening right now. There's no way of saying what this is. Even this word happening that might arise, this word awareness that might present itself, there's no way of saying what that is. We only call it awareness because it seems like somebody told us to call it awareness. We all have the impression that when we were a baby 1 hour old, we didn't have a story for this. So if we don't have a story for this, what is it? Right now, think the question, what is there when there is no thinking? Just right now as you're sitting here, think the question, what is there when there is no thinking? And at the end of the question, for a moment, there's no thought. But it doesn't feel like there's nothing happening. There's this happening, this vibrant happening that's not a thought. So, in this world of so-called non-duality, the non-dual consideration, this is all that's being acknowledged. This, which is not a thought. This, which no one is doing. This, which doesn't have a form. Just this. Being this. So as Nisargadatta Maharaj used to point out, that in this consideration, we simply stand firm as this vibrant occurrence, this vibrant unexplainable occurrence. He would ask you, what are you before I am arises? So before these words arise, what are you? Well, just this happening. Happening. And ultimately, there's no way of saying what this is. These apparent words, we don't even know what those are. The next apparent thought, we don't know what that is. There's no way of saying what that is. Within our world of storylines, someone told us to call it thought. Someone told us to describe a certain other aspect of this mysterious happening as description. Someone told us to call another portion of it a wall, and another portion of it a floor, and another portion of it consciousness. Or they told us to call the basic happening consciousness, but that's not really its name. If you lived in a different country, you'd get another name, a different name. The word just points to this totally mysterious happening. As U.G. Krishnamurti used to point out, we go around thinking that there's a self to realize, or there's a psyche to purify, or there's a soul to liberate, but that's not true. There is no self to realize, there's no psyche to purify, there's no soul to liberate. There is only just this totally unexplainable, vibrant occurrence. Just happening. No one's making it happen. Ultimately, the focus of this so-called non-dual inquiry, the focus of this non-dual sensibility, is simply the acknowledgement of this present happening. And it's just questioning, what is it? And it's the realization that all of the assumptions that we generally have about it are not true. There's no way of saying what this is. The descriptions don't apply. The notion that it has a form doesn't apply. The notion that we're something separate from it doing it, that doesn't apply. It's not true. There's just this being this. Ultimately, from this non-dual sensibility, there isn't a non-dual sensibility. Even that description is false. It's not about duality and non-duality. Again, it's just a simple acknowledgement that whatever this happening of this moment is, the feeling that something is happening, there's no way of saying what it is. That to constantly go back to a focus on defining this intellectually, that misses the point. It takes the focus away from this totally mysterious happening, this totally mysterious vibrancy, in which descriptions and definitions arise, but they are also just a totally unexplainable happening. As this last person who wrote in pointed out, the so-called intellectual thoughts and rationalizations are merely another mysterious portion of this happening. And living your life with actions that spring forth from any such understanding is also just another portion of this happening that can't be explained. As Jiddu Krishnamurti pointed out, that as long as we maintain a focus on thought, we can never learn. To acknowledge this movement, this vital dance of the moment, is to learn. He points out that the word is not the thing. So the concept that points to this mysterious happening, it's not the happening. That description is not the happening. That label is not telling us what this is. That, again, Jiddu Krishnamurti would point out that this can't be analyzed intellectually. It just happens. And that perfection is this movement, this action of the moment. Perfection has nothing to do with coming to some final point in the future. Perfection is this vital action of the moment, this movement that has no particular form. And he says, if you're at all intelligent, you give up trying to be anything in particular. Because there isn't anything in particular here, other than this vital, unformed action. Vital, unformed movement, in his words. Again, as Alan Watts pointed out, You can't capture flowing water in a bucket. And to try to capture flowing water in a bucket means you don't understand flowing water. In the same way, you can't capture the vital, unformed, vibrant happening of this moment by defining it as some form. That's like taking a snapshot of flowing smoke and telling everybody, this is exactly what smoke looks like. But that's not what smoke looks like. Smoke is a vital event, a vibrant dynamic, a flowing, an unformed happening. It can't be captured in a snapshot. We can't define life as something in particular because it's not something in particular. It's a vital, vibrant happening, an unformed, a vibrancy, a liveliness. Everything happens in the same way that seasons shift, that water flows, that the movement of the planets occur. It simply happens. It's spontaneous. So the Taoists would point out that a sage lives a life of contentment, simply awaiting the decrees of heaven. What are the decrees of heaven? It's simply this happening in whatever way it happens. There's no concern about it, because ultimately everything that happens is simply this spontaneous expression. Now, this doesn't mean you're going to sit around doing nothing. It means that whatever circumstances you find yourself in, you seem to find yourself in certain external circumstances. Those external circumstances are the expression of this totally mysterious happening. And your response to those external circumstances are also the expression of this totally mysterious happening. The urge that we have to participate in life in whatever way we seem to participate in life, we don't create that urge. Whatever urge you have right now to focus on thought or not focus on thought, to, you know, whatever urge is arising in this moment, you don't create that urge. The urge to do anything at all, you don't create those urges. And whatever urge is strongest, you don't decide that it's strongest. That urge simply expresses itself. As the Ashtavakra Gita points out, for a person that is free of ideas of me and mine and a sense of doing, aware that no thing actually exists, does not act even in acting. Considerations like I am this or I am not this are finished. There's nothing needing to be done. Even in seeing this, it is not someone seeing. What is one to think? It goes on to say that a wise person finds peace by simply knowing the truth. People cannot come to know themselves by practices. And at a certain point, it states that they have Ashtavakra saying, using the truth, I have managed to extract the painful thorn of views. Now, that doesn't mean that what we call a view stops happening. It just means that it's coming to realize that none of those views are true, that even this happening that we call a view is a totally unexplainable happening. As Alan Watts once stated, forget what we think we know. Return to what we were when we were babies, when we had not yet learned the names or the language. Just feel what is without calling it anything. He goes on to say, your breath happens, light all around you happens, your response to it by blinking simply happens. You're unable to do anything but be aware of the buzz, the visual buzz, the audible buzz, the tangible buzz, the smellable buzz. All around, the buzz is going on. He goes on to say, in other words, in this primal way of looking at things, there is no difference between what you do on the one hand and what happens to you on the other. It is all the same process. Just as your thought happens, the car happens outside, and so do the clouds and the stars. We are out of touch with reality. We confuse the world as it is described with the world which actually is. We are sick with a fascination for names and numbers, symbols, signs, conceptions, and ideas. I wouldn't actually say we were sick. I mean, all of that is just part of the expression. You know, it's all just this mysterious happening the way it happens. He goes on to say, what I am really saying is that you don't need to do anything, because you are as much a phenomenon of nature as trees, clouds, the patterns in running water, the flickering of fire, the arrangement of the stars, and the form of the galaxy. You are that, and there is nothing wrong with you at all. Jiddu Krishnamurti would say, and I quote, when we look at this life of action, the growing tree, the bird on the wing, the flowing river, the movement of the clouds, of lightning, of machines, the action of the waves upon the shore, then you see that life itself is action, endless action that has no beginning and no end. It is something that is everlastingly in movement, and this is the universe, God, bliss, reality. But we conceptually reduce the vast action of life to our own petty little action and ask what we should do. Life is always in a state of arising. In this arising, there is no continuity, nothing that can be identified as permanent. Life is constant movement, action. Each moment of this action has never been before and will never be again. Perfection is not an end, an absolute fixed point. There is a continual movement, a continual flow. Perfection is the action, not an absolute objective to which you are progressing. You want me to describe pure action. Such a description you would call a positive teaching. But you are always changing. You are never the same. Each moment brings its own change. So if you are at all intelligent, you give up being anything in particular. Or as U.G. Krishnamurti would say, someone told you this is a table. You don't know, apart from what you've been told. Every time you look at this, you repeat that it's a table. What are you doing that for? That's my question. Why are you hung up on phrases? This is a state where there is no division of being asleep, awake, or dreaming. There's no division at all. I don't even know if I'm alive or dead. I have no way of knowing anything. These words are like the barking of a dog. If you put this on that level and just listen to this vibration, you are out. You will walk out, and you will never again listen to anyone else about this in your lifetime. Finished. I say there's no such division as waking, dreaming, and deep sleep. I have to use these words because they are part of the language, but they don't mean anything to me. Or as Nisargadatta Maharaj stated, the sense of presence, which has come spontaneously, will leave spontaneously. What is without concept or quality. This dynamic is always in a fluid state. What will happen, no one can say. It is just happening. No one is doing it. It has no name, but you give many names to it. In the realm of concepts, there occurs what you call spiritual seeking and spiritual knowledge. This is nonsense. There is no question of I or you understanding something. Everything is spontaneous. Presently, you are stirring and vibrant. Don't think you are something separate from this stirring, vibrant play. When body is transcended, mind is transcended, and consciousness is also transcended, from then on, all is merely happening, and there is no authority or doer. Or, as Christ pointed out, the wind blows wherever it blows. You can't know where it's coming from, and you can't know where it's going to, and it's exactly the same for everything born of spirit. He was pointing out that everything is simply spirit, this vibrant pulsing happening right now. There's no way of saying what it is. There's nothing that exists apart from this. It simply happens the way it happens. It simply is what it is. All right. As always, this is just for your consideration. This is what is classically known as a non-dual sensibility, a non-dual perspective. But again, within that classic non-dual sensibility, there isn't any such thing as a non-dual sensibility. There is no duality and non-duality. It's simply the acknowledgement of the fundamental nature of the happening of this moment. There's no possible way of saying what this is. No one is making it happen. It simply is what it is. This is not saying that everybody should have this sense of existence. It's not saying that this is the one correct way of looking at existence. It's simply saying this is one of the mysterious expressions of this happening. If you relate to it, that's great. If you don't relate to it, that's great. It's just for your consideration. So until next time, I wish you only good things. However, I know you're going to get a mixed bag of things. Still, I wish you well. Take care. Bye.